Welcome to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I'm Justin Mason, lead fantasy analyst and writer at friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm great, man. Jumped back into the DFS pool today. I logged into my DraftKings account just for shits and see what was going on over there, and I had a dollar in my account, so I figured why not.
Nice.
And, yeah.
So you're a million. Like, you're a millionaire, right?
It's like finding a dollar on the ground. Been turning it into $6 as of right now.
Wow. Do you think they'll send you a big check for it?
Hopefully they do, because hopefully you all know the best fantasy players play daily. Mm-hmm. So that's how you find who the true winners are.
Yes, so. Exactly. Not people who have come up with some algorithm or use other people's information.
No. In the season-long, people are wasting their time. Everyone just gets hurt anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. For those who don't know, that's an inside joke on Twitter. Not really
it's
that
a
inside.
Huge inside
but,
joke.
Yeah.
You can ask me about it, and I'll probably tell you.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. Joining us today is a special guest. First time on the podcast, we've got Brandon Myers from Razzball.com. Brandon, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me. Excited to talk some baseball. And apparently I'm terrible at fantasy because I don't play DFS at all. Not because I don't think I'll like it. I think I would like it a little too much. And between all the time I already spend on baseball and football, adding DFS into all of that would probably sap up the like hour of work I get done in any given day. So just avoid at this point.
And what's football?
I don't have a problem with DFS. I enjoy playing DFS. I play it on a fairly regular basis.
Oh, I don't mind it either.
I've been playing it a little bit less than I usually do this year, just because I've got so many commitments this baseball season. It's been a little bit more difficult to really to play daily. I don't like what DFS has become, because it has largely monopolized a large portion of the industry and the analysis, and I think it's and I think people who say it's not gambling are lying to themselves, and really they're just lying to other people, because it's just straight up gambling on sports, which I have no problem with, but let's be honest about it.
Well, it doesn't matter if it is or not. We don't have to be honest anymore. That's
yeah,
gone.
Right?
It's past. Everybody gamble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. You know, do it makes you feel good, or you enjoy doing whatever. I've been very critical of the industry, because it feels a lot like, oh God, have you guys ever seen the movie? I think it's called Two for the Money with Matthew McConaughey.
I've never watched pretty much any movie you guys name.
That's so. Right. So it, no. it's a movie, Matthew McConaughey and Al Pacino. It is a really crappy movie, kind of largely set in the behind the scenes world of sports and football gambling, you know, the guys who give away advice on those like hotlines and stuff like that. And that's what it's felt like, you know, the DFS industry has felt like. It's like, you know, here, I guarantee you a win if you just pay me this kind of money. Like, it's like, oh, come on, let's be serious. This is sleazy as hell.
Wait, so when I buy someone's lineup on Twitter, that's not a good idea?
No, and actually someone pointed out to me that it's potentially illegal, actually, to sell lineups.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm kidding about the first part, but I didn't think that'd be illegal. I mean, if you buy them, I feel like that's just an idiot tax anyways.
Yeah, no, it's totally an idiot tax. And I don't know. I can't remember if he told it to me on a podcast or if he told it to me privately, so I won't out who it was.
Yeah, sure.
But it's someone who I respect a lot in the industry, and so I would take his word that it's potentially illegal. And though I'm sure it hasn't been contested in court or anything, don't buy other people's lineups. Like, learn how to play the game yourself.
Right.
All right. Well, now that PSA is out and done with, just a weird tangent we started off the show with this week. Brandon, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself and where you can reach on social media?
I am at Ditka Sausage Pod on Twitter. I'm writing over at Razzball. We actually just got the news today that our podcast, Ditka Sausage and Fantasy Sports, is moving over to Razzball. So that's a new development that's pretty exciting.
Congratulations.
So thank you very much. So all of our content will be over there. Nice. DT and I write maybe once every other week, so you can always be catching some articles from us out there. I have a few good stat articles coming down the line, but it just takes a little bit longer time than I was expecting to sort through the data and really put it together for an article. But I'll have something coming out this week, and then some more stat-driven stuff coming out after that.
Well, great. And people should go and subscribe to your guys' podcast. I was a guest on there not too long ago. Love what you guys do. So thought it was about time we had you on. And not to mention, you're in the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. So, you know, want to definitely and you're doing better than me, which isn't saying much.
It's not. But, you know, as long as I stay above you, I feel like it's acceptable.
You're in my league, too, right?
I am. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think I took a huge hit today. You might actually be above me now.
I don't know if aren't I in last place? Oh, no.
No,
oh, no.
You've actually been climbing.
I've moved up to 12th place. I have surpassed you. I'm sorry, Brandon. We're going to have to cut you off the podcast.
Speaking of TGFBI, really quickly, I have a little minor rant on TGFBI.
Please do.
Eddie Almaguer, I dislike you. That's it.
Yeah.
He picks up every player that I get, and then I get nobody because it's a stupid weekly league with one day for pickups. So I miss out on like everybody on Fab because he outbids me by like $3.
Yeah, there are going to be some changes to the format
just
next
kidding,
year.
Eddie. I'm just kidding, Eddie. I don't hate
we
you.
Love Eddie. Eddie works over at Fake Teams and I think Baseball Perspectives too now.
Prospect 1500, I believe, as well.
Oh, wow. I mean, he's everywhere. So, and he's a really good prospect guy. And as much as people like to paint me as anti-prospects and anti-prospect guys, I like some of them outside of Matt. So, And Eddie's a good dude. But we'll have some, you know, and I'll probably talk about this more on the next Invitational podcast. We're going to have some changes next year to the format. I think we're going to add a separate head-to-head points league. And then we're also going to probably at least make lineup changes more than once a week. You know, maybe something where you can change your lineup on Mondays and on Thursdays. You know, and maybe potentially add another fab period. So... because, yeah, the weekly, I know a lot of people like the weekly in the industry because it's...
Negative.
Well, because it's makes less work for them to do, especially when you're, you know, in 17 leagues like I am and running 13 leagues for the Invitational. It makes that portion of it easier, but it's also... I think the majority of people play in daily formats nowadays, or at least closer to daily formats.
I do have a question. Is it actually easier... to spend like an hour or 2 hours on Sunday doing all pickups, or is it easier to spend 5 minutes every day doing pickups?
You know,
I understand the thought process. Like it's once a week, so if Sunday's the day you get away, that's great. But honestly, sitting down Sunday to do weekly fab is so much more work than doing daily for me.
Yeah, well, see, here's the thing: like daily leagues, whether it's daily fab or just daily moves. Gives an advantage to people with more time. I mean, and it also allows people who live in different time zones different advantages. So, for instance, you know, the guy I just had on the Invitational podcast, Tom Pringle, lives in London. He's English. And the games start in the middle of the night for him. So setting a lineup when someone has been scratched or isn't in the lineup tonight becomes more difficult.
Here's the thing with that. In my fantasy cricket league, they have the advantage. So what's the difference?
This is very true. But this is why I don't play fantasy cricket.
I couldn't tell you one thing about that game. But I'm just saying, like, I mean, in an ideal world for a league that I would construct, it would be you could do fab. I'd just do a daily fab every day. So it's not.
But then why even do fab then? Like just.
So it's not fastest finger because fastest finger is an advantage. And
well, not
I
fastest
think...
finger, bro. Just do waivers. Like, don't. Like, daily fab is like.
Yeah, waivers is fine. Yeah, I don't know what you.
The daily fab, like, fab becomes useless in a league in which you can pick up daily. Unless you're in a really shallow format, which I don't tend to play. You know, my most shallow format is Tout Wars, and it's a 12 team mix league. So, I mean, I prefer weekly fab and daily moves. I just think that that's what I prefer. You know, you get to move guys in and out, but you get to pick up guys once a week. But I also prefer deeper benches, so you get, you know, you have guys to pick from on your roster when guys get hurt or sent down to the minors and things like that. But let's move on. Let's talk about let's talk about some actual baseball and players involved, because we're 10 minutes in the podcast and we haven't actually mentioned anybody, any players by name. Brandon, remind again everybody where you reached on social media, you said?
At Ditka Sausage Pod.
Okay, and you can follow Matt on Twitter at MDTompFWFB, me on Twitter at JustinMasonFWFB. You can follow Mike on Twitter, even though he's not here, at MikeWarnerFWFB. But please send something negative about the Rays. All right, let's. We're going to start off talking about one of the hottest players in baseball as of late, who kind of popped up out of nowhere, and this is Max Muncy. He plays first base for the Los Angeles Dodgers. If you haven't been paying close attention to baseball so far this year, you're probably like, who the fuck is Max Muncy? And I'm right there with you, because I have no idea who the hell Max Muncy is, even though I've been watching him play for the last month or so. So, Brandon, I'll start with you. Do you buy into what Max Muncy is doing?
I buy into a little bit of it. It's a guy that's always shown patience at the plate, 13.2% career walk rate so far. He's actually got 25 walks already this season in 152 plate appearances. His outside swing percentage would be seventh if we draw the line at 150 plate appearances for the season. So he's not going outside the zone for his swings. That being said, obviously the pace he's at right now is a little ridiculous, but he is a guy that changed his swing over the last couple years, really went to a shorter starting point, went to a more in-line stance rather than an open stance. And you don't really see him fall off balance like he was, you know, prior to the swing change. So I think there is a little bit to buy in here. That being said, it does seem like maybe it should be a Woody Harrelson character, like Kingpin style, Roy Munson. Like, it seems like that kind of name, that kind of guy. But like I said, the actual changes he's made are, you know, impressive.
Matt, are you buying in on Max Muncy?
From a power perspective, I don't think he's going to slug 616 like he is currently. But I'm with Brandon as far as the swing change has been documented. I don't want to get this wrong, but I think Jeff Sullivan wrote an article on Fangraphs.
A fantastic piece.
Yes, really good. I love the player breakdown pieces. And it shows you the well-documented swing change, and it's night and day difference just from looking at old Max Muncy to maximum Max Muncy that we have now. But don't feel bad if you don't know who he was. I'm going to read you really quickly. It's only one sentence long. The Baseball Prospectus annual, if you don't get it, you should every year, every preseason, and they cover every player, like, you know, for the most part. Here's what they wrote about Max Muncy. Max Muncy munched on AAA pitching, but that's about where the bat maxes out. That's it. And that's what he's done for his entire career to this point. He's a weird profile. When he was drafted by the A's, I want to say he was a catcher at first, at college.
Yep.
And then they moved him right to, you know, he wasn't good enough to play to catch, and he didn't really have a glove or athletic system to play anywhere else. So he played first base only for a couple years, and he actually hit decently well in the minors, not for really power, but showed good plate skills, which are still consistent with him now. They kind of started finding weird spots for him, moved him to third a little bit. Then he started playing him at second, and then the Dodgers claimed him on waivers because they have $1 billion, but they still run the team like they're the Rays. So they claimed everybody off waivers, like Max Muncy and all these guys. And I would say it's a scouting development find, but there's no way that they could have projected this to even happen. No. I don't care. If they tell you that they did, they're lying. Obviously, he's got good plate skills, which is something that you can look for, and it's a really good thing to fill out your roster. It's a good depth piece, but what they're getting out of him now is outstanding, and they have to be thrilled. Because essentially, he saved their season in a sense.
Yeah, doesn't he lead the team in home runs?
I believe he does, and Justin Turner was out for a while, and you know, Bellinger's now playing center field to make room for Max Muncy, which is kind of weird putting your franchise – your cornerstone that's left standing with Seager being out.
Well, also because they don't have Seager and they've got to move Chris Taylor.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting you know, and he's another guy too. Like, if he continues this pace, like, he won't. But say for some reason he ends up with 25 home runs, 30 home runs, which feels weird to say, but it's entirely possible. He's only played 44 games and he's got 12. He's a guy that you don't bank on anything for next year. You just kind of, just because you have, the Dodgers have so much talent around them, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, and there's so many moving parts on that roster, and he'll still be the odd man out. So, I mean, even keeper dynasty format, whatever format you're in, if you keep a dynasty, you can convince somebody to take him in a trade, I would do it. But redraft, I mean, you pay nothing for, so just ride him out because he's freaking carrying you on offense.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say, yeah, like that. You know, you can't count on him for, you know, keeper and dynasty formats for future seasons. I wouldn't even count on him for August, honestly.
Right. Yeah.
Because the Dodgers may just decide to go buy anybody they can at the deadline. And yeah, and they can afford to, and they also have the prospect depth to trade away to, in order to go do it. And one of the things we've seen recently in recent trade deadlines is that players don't always go for the prices we think they should, or they may have gone for a few years ago. And so, like, if Max Muncy struggles towards the trade deadline, then they may just say, well, screw it, we'll go get, you know, a Logan Morrison type, or, you know, maybe they decide to go get Mike Moustakas, who's on a you know, cheap one-year deal, you know, and won't cost too much in trade. So that being said, I buy the swing change, you know, what Brandon just, what he just outlined, and you can see it for yourself in that Jeff Sullivan piece on FanGraphs. I think it is still the top article on his player page. It's a legit swing change, but what you also notice in that, in one of the gifts that he has there of him hitting a home run against Philadelphia, is just how strong he is. And he's just a super strong, stout dude who, like, he powers that home run with straight upper body.
A lot of his, from the limited at bats, I'm not claiming to be a Max Muncy expert or anything like that. I've probably watched a handful of at bats this season, and a lot of the home runs I appear to get that are not anything fancy. It's just leverage and muscling them out.
Mm-hmm.
It's
doesn't have a ton of torque to his swing.
No, it's a quiet swing. Not a lot of movement in the lower half. It's all upper body, mm-hmm. in my opinion, my amateur opinion, just watching it. He's a big, strong dude, you can tell.
Yeah.
And he gets a pitch out over the plate, and if it's up, he's gonna hit it out. But I think he might potentially have a weakness low in the zone.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we'll see if that gets exploited or not. Teams will find that book, I promise you. Once Max Muncy makes his routes around the league, teams will figure it out. It's just, but like I said, it's fantasy, so enjoy what you have, because, man, you know, he's got to be the free agent pickup of the year so far.
I think he's definitely, I mean, I think there's a lot of guys that could maybe fit
that profile,
especially from the pitching side.
Yeah.
You know, Walker Buehler, his teammate, is among the, Andrew Heaney, who's pitching tonight against Seattle. I haven't seen how he's doing so far, but, you know, I think he's in that camp as well. So I'm writing him out because I don't think you're going
to
get anywhere near what he's been able to produce in terms of trade value. But also be willing to just cut bait if he starts to really struggle over the course of a week or two.
I'm a DFS legend. Played Nelson Cruz, hit a home run. So now I'm 16th out of 11,000.
Well, I don't like that because he is going up against Andrew Haney, who's my boy. And I need him to have a good week this week. So that's not okay, Matt.
Mary F. Kill. Andrew Heaney, Chris Stratton, Garrett Richards, go. Kyle Gibson, I mean. Not Richards.
Oh. what did you actually say?
Mary F. Kill.
Yeah, no, but
Andrew Heaney.
Who did
Chris
you actually?
Stratton, and I said Garrett Richards, but I meant Kyle Gibson.
Oh, okay.
You love all four of those guys, so.
Yes. I'm marrying.
Not to put you on the spot, but
I'm gonna marry Heaney.
Okay, makes sense.
I will. Oh God, this is gonna be harsh, dude. I guess I'm gonna fuck Kyle Gibson and I'll kill Chris Stratton. That's rough, dude.
Yeah, not to derail the podcast, but I was just, you know, I every other word out of your mouth is Heaney, Stratton, or Gibson. And it was Garrett Richards before that. So.
Yeah, well, last year it was Garrett Richards for sure.
Yeah.
All right.
then the Giants have to replace Stratton in the rotation, though.
No, they don't have to replace. Why would they have to replace Stratton in the rotation? Did I miss something? Oh, if I kill him. Oh, okay. You scared me there for a second. I thought maybe he got hurt or something.
I'm just saying, no, if you take him out, you got to find somebody.
they got Tyler Beatty. It's all right.
Yeah, great. All right, let's move on and talk about someone you won't be cutting bait on anytime soon. That's Paul Goldschmidt. Has gone just off recently. Brought his average up to 253. Has hit 12 home runs now, stolen two bases. Is this the beginning of the Paul Goldschmidt turnaround, or is this your sell high point, Matt?
This is definitely the player that that we expected to see. Obviously not this red hot this week, but he's making up for last time, and I think you got to hold him, man. If you held him through the downs, and you're definitely not going to get rid of him now. You know, speaking of Fangraphs again, a couple of days ago I wrote an article saying how he seems to be struggling with a little bit of velocity, which is interesting. Read it. It's Jay Jaffe wrote it. It's a pretty good article with some nice GIFs and stuff on it. But if you look at where Goldschmidt is now, he had a miserable start. Everyone knows that, right? But one encouraging sign is the walk rate never really fluctuated. It's still about 13%, which if you can go 13% walk rate while not hitting, that's very encouraging. It means he hasn't deteriorated the skills. I do think there's something, too, struggling with velocity. The K percentage is up about 5%, almost 6%, which is an oddity, considering his career has been around 21, 22, 23%. Right now it's at 27, nearly 28%. Everything else looks normal. WRC plus is right in the range, 133 in 2016, 142 last year. He's 136 right now. My big concern with a big value for fantasy baseball comes in is the stolen bases, and the walk rate maintained, but the stolen bases are way, way, way down. So, using my amateur opinion, with the strikeout rate going up and stolen base attempts going down, is there a little injury we're dealing with here? I don't know. He hasn't missed time, so you know, it'd be just me guessing at that point. But hopefully he's over it because he's hitting the ball now, and this is the kind of guy you paid for. But again, you know, a lot of what gives Paul Goldschmidt that first round back there, then you know, it's a different player.
Brandon, what are your thoughts on Goldschmidt?
Well, early in the season, when you watched him at the plate, it looked like he was up there guessing, like he was trying to get ahead of the pitcher so that he could get himself, you know, started and go in. And you really actually saw him get off balance early in the season, which is not something you would equate with Paul Goldschmidt. When you saw some ugly, like one-handed falling over swings, which is really not his thing. You know, he's always been under control, has a great eye. And it seems like that part of it's figured out. I share Matt's concern about the high velocity. I don't know that I've seen him pull a high velocity fastball yet. And, you know, watching him through the season, I went back and watched a number of his at-bats, you know, getting ready for this. And really, the balls he's hitting out of the plate right now, or hitting out of the park right now, are the breaking balls and the slower, you know, 91 to 93 mile an hour fastballs. Anything over that up in the zone, it really looks like he has to go the other way with those at this point. I don't know if that's a huge concern. The other thing that's really caught my eye was he's been terrible against righties this season, which is not something he's struggled with since he's really become the Paul Goldschmidt we know and love. Only hitting 218 versus righties this season. You know, he wasn't hitting anything early in the season, so some of that has to be attributed there. But, you know, I'm a little worried here on Paul Goldschmidt as far as what you're going to get. It is the worst UBR and the second worst Wade stolen base of his career as well. So I don't think the stolen bases are going to come back, at least this season. I think if you can get him sold for draft day value, you have to look at that opportunity.
Yeah, I just don't know that, considering all his struggles, that you'll be able to get draft day value. I think if you can get draft day value right now, then I might explore doing that, especially if I've got another first baseman kind of ramped up and ready to go. But it's not like first baseman, you know, first base has been a very stout position. It's been a fairly weak position this year. Once again, me being a year late on predictions like that, but because I was the person last year saying, well, first base looks really, really weak and like huge drop offs. And then we had all the explosions from the Cody Ballingers and Logan Morrisons of the world. So, but this year, first base has been fairly weak. And so I don't know that a lot of people, unless you lucked into like a Brandon Belt or someone like that, can afford to trade Paul
Goldschmidt.
Jose
Martinez.
Yeah, Jose Martinez is another one. But, you know, then there's been a lot of guys who have really struggled at the position. So I think you're just holding and hoping that this is a turnaround. He's still hitting the ball very, very hard. He is, you know, he's pulling the ball around the same amount. He's, you know, he's getting the ball into the air, you know, a decent amount. I don't see a ton in the profile other than the added strikeouts that really concerned me too much. I think maybe this was him pressing a little bit, him adjusting to the new way the ball moves with the humidor in Arizona, and now we're starting to see the Paul Goldschmidt that we kind of all have known and love. He's hitting over 400 over the course of the last 3 weeks and has 6 home runs during that time, including though most of them have been on the road, and he did play a series in Colorado. At least one has been at home. The real question will become is when they have another home stand, does he continue to mash? Or does he go back to struggling in Chase Field with the humidor? Because that'll be the real sign. So if you believe that this has been Coors and road induced, then you know maybe try to sell on Paul Goldschmidt right now. I'm not ready to say that yet, so I'm going to hold on to him, the shares that I've got. Let's talk about Jaime Candelario, because he's been an interesting guy. Already hit for 10 home runs this season, and that, I think, is more than some people really expected to hit for an entire season, including myself. I did not believe he had this real kind of power in his bat.
Man,
shown it so
you're
far.
You read my stuff, do you?
I try not to.
good to know me, a good plan.
Well, then why don't you talk about Candelario and tell me why I was wrong.
Yeah. I think Candelario is he was the definition of a blocked prospect at this time last year. Probably, I like agitating Cub fans, but I'll say the second best third baseman in the game in front of him, behind Nolan Arenado and Chris Bryant. Obviously, he's behind Bryant. Javi Baez, if Bryant gets hurt or someone else was supposed to get hurt and move around the diamond, Javi Baez would play third. And so he was the definition of super blocked. If you move him to first, he's got Rizzo there. Like he needed to go, and they ended up flipping him for Justin Wilson as part of that deal. But I said this for a while, and I stand by it, and it's kind of nice to see him producing. I think Candelario, in my opinion, was the definition of a league average offensive third baseman, and he's finally getting that chance now. 263, 350, 507. Yeah, I think the slugging percentage is a little high. 10 home runs for now, which I thought he'd be more of a doubles guy than home runs, which, you know, that seems to be where he's trending anyways. 15 doubles, had 27 in doubles last year in AAA with the Cubs, 9 more after he got traded, so was at 36. 36 doubles and 15 homers and 4 triples last year in AAA, hit about 265. So that's a good offensive season. He's pretty much repeating that now. In Detroit, and Detroit is a perfect place. You find fantasy gems like this all the time on teams with extended, giving guys extended looks that they wouldn't get. You know, Candelario, if he's up with the Cubs this year, doesn't get traded, I think he's up on the major league roster, but I think he's a bench player and he doesn't have anywhere near this fantasy value. And I had this conversation with a staff member of FWFB today. It was like Ben Brennis, and he was talking about, you know, why I had Sandy Alcantara rated so high. The numbers aren't great. It's because he's on a bad team. And when he comes up, he's part of their future, as is Candelario in Detroit. And, you know, you look at Caleb Smith in Miami right now is a perfect example of this. On a good team, he's not a starting pitcher. But they're getting these chances now, and they can develop. And either number one, in a situation like Smith, Miami trades him. But a situation with Candelario or even Alcantara, like I mentioned, they're building themselves into a future role. Mm-hmm. And Alcantara is kind of the pitcher version of Candelario, because if he stays in St. Louis, he's not cracking that rotation. He's working out of the bullpen, and his value is completely capped.
Just like Ronaldo Lopez.
Right. He goes to the White Sox, and if he's in the Nationals situation, he's probably working the sixth inning right now, or could mop up innings because they called up another like Wander Suero. He's probably in that role. And Candelario now in Detroit is hitting in the top third of the lineup. I don't know Detroit's bad, but their top third is respectable hitters. So there's nothing wrong with the top third of their lineup. Nothing Candelario was doing jumps out to me as unsustainable. I think the power comes down a little bit, but I don't think it's that much. I think if he stays healthy, I don't see any reason why he can't hit 22, 23 home runs and be this 260 hitter you're looking at right now. I think the slugging percentage probably drops into the 460, 470 range at best, but still, that's a hell of a player. I mean, the plate skills are you know, elite throughout the minor leagues. Strikeouts are up, which they should be, making the major league in the extended time in the major leagues. But the walk rate's at 10%. That's fine. Not going to offer anything in the speed department, but that's fine. Candelario's a nice little player, and he's a league average third baseman, and that's perfect for what Detroit needs.
Brandon, what are your thoughts on Candelario?
I don't think I'm quite as high. He did have 5 homers over 8 games, including a 2-homer game. In that 2-homer game, one was a no-doubter, but one was just right down the line and just barely squeaked over the wall. And he may have gotten a little pull or power happy after that because he's been striking out a bit more and not really walking since he's gone on that little home run tear. So, you know, I don't know the power's there, but he has been hitting at the top of the Tigers lineup, mostly out of the 2 spots. So he has the opportunities to score you runs and maybe get the occasional RBIs, which has really helped his fantasy value and kind of made him an underappreciated asset this year. Just when I watched the swing, it doesn't look like it's a power swing. It looks like there's a lot of pull tendency there. So I wonder if there's not some slumps and some holes that people are going to find. But, you know, as Matt mentioned, through the minors, he's always had good plate skills. So I don't really expect him to go through, you know, too many struggles as far as strikeouts go. But I just don't know if there's going to be a little bit of report out on him eventually, and they're going to find some holes. I think he's going to have to eventually go the other way a little bit more. And he does have a little bit of a split. He's hitting, mashing lefties, 322 against them, but only hitting 240 against righties. So I'd like to see that come up as well. And, you know, it's a third baseman, so you're not really expecting to get stolen bases, but he's not going to give you any. I'd probably take the under on 20 total home runs, even given the 10 that he's been spotted so far.
I'm probably in between you two guys. I think he can continue to do something similar to this. I don't think he's going to hit 30 home runs or 28 home runs or anything like that,
yeah.
But I think he could hit another 10 to 13 homers, and I think he could do it with a pretty decent average, you know, 260, 270, something like that. I don't think he is a slugger by any stretch of the imagination. I think the home run to fly ball rate comes down a little bit. He's at about 17% right now. He does pull the ball a little bit too much, like Brandon was mentioning, and that could be a cause of concern as pitchers start to kind of readjust to him. But like Matt mentioned, he's going to play, and he's going to play every day. You know, they moved Nick Castellanos full-time into the outfield to ensure that he gets every day at bats. And so, and that lineup isn't, you know, isn't bad at the top half. So there's going to be plenty of opportunities for him to drive in runs for that Tigers team. And as much as like he has with some of his home runs, taking advantage of bad pitching, that's pretty much the makeup of, you know, 3 of the 4 opponents he has in the AL Central is bad pitching. So it's not like he's not going to get to see a lot of bad pitchers on the Twins and on the White Sox. You know, I mean, obviously Cleveland is a better team, but the Royals suck too. So, you know, I think he's going to have plenty of opportunities kind of beat up on some of these poor pitchers and maybe get to 25 home runs this year. And I think that's a pretty valuable piece as long as he can stay healthy. Let's talk about a guy who was thought to be a valuable piece coming into the season and has been struggling as of late and really off and on most of the season, and that is Gary Sanchez. He was the top-rated catcher coming into the year. Currently for the season, Gary Sanchez has 12 home runs, but he's also batting 190, 290, 291, 430 triple slash. So, Brandon, what are you doing right now if you're a Gary Sanchez owner?
I'm not a Gary Sanchez owner, but right now it's probably a bit of a panic mode here. I mean, he's definitely not hitting for average. He's hitting 23.4% infield fly balls, which leads the majors. If it didn't lead the majors, I'd be shocked. I mean, I hated Rougned Odor last year for hitting like 15% infield fly balls. So, I mean, we're looking at somebody who's just trying to hit everything out of the park, I think. I think he's overexerting himself, trying to lift everything in the air. He might have taken the whole launch angle a little bit too far there. He and Contreras still lead catchers and plate appearances, so you are getting that out of him, which is very valuable out of the catcher spot, is just getting somebody that's going to play every day. So you're still getting good runs and RBIs from him for a catcher, especially hitting fifth out of the Yankees lineup. You know, as a catcher, he's doing fine, but for where you took him and the numbers you were expecting, you've got to be disappointed at this point. He's not even hitting line drives. He has the second lowest line drive rate among qualified hitters, and that's on the head of only Carlos Santana right now. And he's just not hitting balls on the outside part of the plate. That's where people have always attacked him in the past, but he's not laying off as much, and he's not making good contact on those this year. And, you know, I don't know if it's something wrong with his swing. It does look like his hands may not be quite getting to the same position that they have been in the past, but it's very small difference that I can see. I don't really know what to do here, because I think you're probably just holding, because you're not going to get the same kind of trade value out of him that, you know, you spent on draft day, and your best chance is for him to get hot like he has before.
Yeah, one of the problems with a guy like Gary Sanchez is you bought him and paid such a high price for him because he gets so many at-bats and because he plays pretty much every day as a catcher. That doesn't help when he's hitting 190, though. I mean, that helps when he's hitting 278 like he was last year. Matt, what are you doing right now with Gary Sanchez?
I don't think you can do anything. Much like we talked about with Goldschmidt, I mean, what you paid for a top 25 pick on Sanchez in most drafts. But I think even with the struggles, I don't have the, you know, play rate or anything in front of me, but he's probably still a top 5 catcher, which isn't really it's not really what you're going for, obviously. But, you know, it's a kind of a consolation because, I mean, if you drafted him as your catcher, obviously you're probably not, you don't have another catcher on your roster unless you grabbed somebody out of the utility role or anything, or a deep league for a bench spot. So who are you really going to replace him with is what I'm saying. I mean, what are you going to do? He's probably a top 5 catcher. At worst, he's top 6 or something like that.
He's 8.
Obviously, he's – okay, still. That still plays in any fantasy league, top 8 catcher. You know what I mean? So who are you going to replace him with? And that's kind of what you get stuck at. You're kind of at the mercy of Gary Sanchez. And, you know, the plate skills are still there. For me, he's actually walking more, which is maybe being too selective. I don't know. He's actually walking more than he really ever has. I know he's a terrible defensive catcher. He's got a good arm, but he's a really bad catcher. Maybe he's taking that to the plate with him. Who knows? Maybe he doesn't like Aaron Boone. Maybe he misses Joe Girardi. I don't know. you know, the thing with Sanchez is there's absolutely nothing you can do unless you could find someone in a keeper dynasty format and you can trade him. But even that, there's still no other catcher in keeper dynasty, maybe outside of Wilson Contreras, that I'd rather have over Sanchez. I don't even know if that's a certain thing. So you kind of just stuck with him. There's really no analysis to give you because what are you going to do?
Would you try to
cop out,
buy on him?
In the keeper dynasty, I would.
What about a redraft?
Yeah, I think I would. Because I think at worst, I don't think there's a projection system out there that would project Gary Sanchez from this point out to be any worse than a top 4 or 5 catcher going forward.
Yeah, I mean, he's currently, like you guys mentioned, you know, he's currently batting.
It's probably outside the top 350 for fantasy players overall, I'm sure.
Oh, wow. But yeah, well, I mean, you mean in terms of the stats so far for this year, not rest of the way.
Player, right? What's player rater for just everybody in a standard league?
Well, I just went off that page.
No worries.
I was looking up his StatCast numbers.
But even then, I'm saying, what do you do?
I think you try to buy. One, I don't think he can be this bad. Two, there are some numbers that show to me that, you know, that are obviously some bad numbers that are unsustainable. Currently, he has got a 197 BABIP. Now, part of that is earned, just the way he's hitting the ball. But part of that is unlucky. He's just gotten unlucky, you know, at the plate. Because it's not like his exit velocity is down a little bit, but it's only 1 mile an hour. Average exit velocity is only down 1 mile an hour from last year. His barrel percentage is actually up over 2% from last year. His, you know, one of the changes he has made is his launch angle has changed, and I'm wondering what Brandon mentioned in terms of kind of buying into the launch angle revolution. Maybe he's gone a little bit too far, and we've seen this with other guys. We saw it with Yonder Alonso last year, where he changed his launch angle drastically, and it really helped at the beginning of the season, and then by the end of the season, he had gone too far with it, and then his infield fly ball percentage went through the roof because he kept just popping up, and that's what's happening with Gary Sanchez. And so I'm wondering if maybe he needs to tone down a little bit. You know, not much. You know, he just changed the launch angle about 2%, or about a percent and a half. You know, if he can bring that down, maybe just a scotch, maybe he starts hitting more of those line drives and starts driving those balls as opposed to popping up.
From what we know with StatCast data, though, I might be wrong in this, but isn't there something like 8 to 10% of batted balls per game don't get picked up unless that changed?
I do not know that, so someone's going to have to...
Yeah, I thought I read something that said... I mean, last year was a new system that they used. Remember, they switched over from PitchFX. I believe they use something else now. So they were saying something like... Maybe Trackman, maybe? They were saying something like 8 to 10% of batted balls in the game.
Yeah, I think that may have been Trackman, which they're no longer using.
Okay, yes. Maybe that's old data. Okay, disregard. So. Well, maybe... I'll try.
I could be wrong. So someone will correct us on Twitter.
I hope so. I really do. I hope so.
And you can always correct us on Twitter if I, you know, people like to correct me for stuff I say on the Sleeper in the Bus podcast on Twitter all the time. So like, don't feel bad. Like if you come to me like on Twitter and be like, "Hey, listen, you're an idiot. This is what you missed." You know, if you call me an idiot, I may call you on back. But you know, my DMs are open. You can always, you know, message me if you want me to talk about certain things or. You know, you have trade questions or things like that, or you can message, you know, do it publicly. I don't have a problem taking criticism, so I know Matt does, but like I don't have a problem taking criticism.
I don't have problem taking criticism because I give I give more than enough.
Yeah,
so.
you give way.
I should be able to take it.
You're engaged. You should be used to criticism by now.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, let's move on to someone who deserves a lot of criticism, so much so that the Mets reportedly are considering sending Michael Conforto down once Jonas Cespedes has returned from his DL stint. Currently hitting .215, .335, .359, has 7 home runs and a stolen base. Brandon, what are you doing with Michael Conforto?
You gotta bench him until further notice, and... In shallow leagues, I think it's somebody that you can move on from at this point. He's just not making good contact this year. The easy storyline is to say that he's still not recovered from the shoulder surgery, and it's the Mets, so it's very possible that, you know, they just left his arm dangling by a string and he can't do anything at this point. It really just looks like he's kind of flipping the bat at the ball at times out there rather than really swinging like, you know, we've seen Conforto do before. I don't know that the batted ball, as far as the contact numbers, were ever amazing with Conforto, but they've taken a big hit this year. I mean, 41.6 hard hit rate last year, according to Fangraphs, 26.8 this year. And he's just not putting good contact out there. He's always struggled against lefties, but he's not hitting anybody this year. I was hoping that we'd see the development of Conforto as somebody who could, you know, hit against lefties and provide everyday value, but I don't know that the Mets are wrong for thinking about sending him down whenever Cespedes and the rest of that outfield get healthy, and you know, they certainly have Nemo there to fill in defensively, and offensively he's been carrying them.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a byproduct though of them not wanting to admit the fact that the Jay Bruce signing was a complete disaster. because he, I mean, as bad as Conforto's looked at times this year, Jay Bruce has looked way worse all season. And so, oh, yeah. I get maybe you just want to maybe rebuild Conforto's confidence, let him work on some things in the minor leagues, but the Mets are virtually a minor league team at the moment anyway, so why not just let him work it out at the major league level? It's not like you're trying to win games at this point. I mean, if you guys are rumored to be wanting to trade Noah Syndergaard and Jacob deGrom, you have given up. So just bench Jay Bruce, and let Conforto hit. Obviously, they're not going to do that because they just signed Bruce to a 3-year contract. They owe him now, $13 million a year for the next, two and a half seasons. So, Matt, what are you doing with Conforto?
I think in any redraft league, he's already been cut by now, I would hope.
Not on my Tout Wars team.
Well, maybe that's just poor management. But I think the problem with the Mets is the Mets. And I think everyone that knows that by now. Mickey Callaway has, from all intents and purposes, from everything I've seen, seems fine in-game manager. But his mentality from injuries, which I keep reading about, he's kind of got that rub some dirt on it and get back out there mentality. And maybe that's not what you do with your 25-year-old former, first-round pick and franchise cornerstone in the outfield, especially when he's got a shoulder concern. Because if you look at the plate skills, the walk rate and the K rate are identical to what they have been in the last, his last two pro seasons, two major league seasons. You just have to think that it's the lack of power right now that's hurting him right now because of the shoulder. And if anything, if they're going to demote him to AAA, you might as well just DL him and let him rest and not even worry about sending him to Vegas or anything like that. Just put him on the DL and let him rest. There's no point to sending him to AAA. That's absolutely the worst thing they could do. Because if you're being honest, the Mets, I've heard trade rumors with DeGrom and Syndergaard, which I think is 100% the exactly right thing, what they need to do. I heard you guys, I believe it was you guys on the sleeper in the bus, and I 100% agree with you. Colorado Rockies or Milwaukee Brewers should be calling them, giving them whatever the hell they want for those two guys. And kind of, you can get major league ready talent from those teams, especially Colorado, and just kind of let it ride, man. Part of running an organization is knowing when things aren't going your way, and I'm not saying quit on the season by any means, but maybe put Conforto on the DL, let him come back in September to get some good at-bats when he's had a lot of time to rest and fully heal, because he rushed back from this thing, man. Remember he was supposed to miss – wasn't he supposed to miss until, May 1st or June 1st or something, and he was there opening day? It was crazy.
Yeah.
And it was a catastrophic shoulder injury. A swing and miss, and he tore his shoulder. That doesn't happen. Perhaps he came back too soon, which again points to the Mets mentality. Who knows, man? It's a bad situation. I'm not changing any my long-term keeper or dynasty value on Conforto. It's staying the same for me because I still think he's a hell of a hitter. I love the skill set for him, and I think he's a very well-rounded hitter, and I think he's going to be a good source of average and 25 home run pop in his prime, but the Mets have to shut him down, at least let him take a break and let him reset at least, because it's doing him no good to keep running him out there. And it also do him no good to keep running him out there in AAA. So.
Yep. Well, and especially in the launching pad that is Vegas, it's not like, I mean.
And unless, plus it's Vegas.
Yeah, unless you're really just trying to send him down to get
mechanical adjustments or something, but well, I feel like that's not the place to do either. So,
yeah, no, that's not the place for a mechanical adjustment. It'd be the place to rebuild his confidence if you feel like maybe he just needs, some time to kind of clear his head and, get, things straight up top. But if he needs mechanical adjustments, it's like sending someone to Colorado Springs. It's why Keon Broxton, is Colorado
Springs.
What's
he even doing this year? I forgot
he's
about Keon
crushing
Broxton.
He's killing it. in Colorado Springs. But I crushed it in Colorado Springs when
What's
I was there.
What's Keon doing today? What's Keon doing?
Brandon, what are your thoughts on Conforto?
I kind of rolled him off before, but, I really just – I think it's probably a lost season for him. I think there is probably some injury I don't know that a trip to the minors is a terrible thing, but I do agree that it could probably just be a DL trip as well, kind of a get healthy and come back when you're ready and, you know, attack it at 100%. We know that ball players deal with stuff day to day, and that's the small things. But if his shoulder's not right, I mean, he got back faster than anybody expected coming off the surgery. So I think he probably just needs to sit down for a little while. Maybe they just bring Cespedes off the DL and move Conforto onto it with, you know, baditis.
You have a Keon Broxton update, Matt?
He's not doing as well as you guys thought. I looked at his numbers, and 419 slugging percentage in Colorado Springs is like a 250 slugging percentage anywhere else.
It's six home runs, 18 stolen bases so far.
Yeah, but 88 strikeouts and 217 at-bats.
Well, yeah, but that's what he does.
So nothing I was expecting something to be changed. And
no, nothing's
you guys,
changed.
You let me down again, like always.
He's the same guy he's always been.
He's just doing a lot.
Yeah, exactly. He's still striking out 36% of the time. All right. Speaking of lots of strikeouts, Alex Wood has had some pretty good stretches, but then also had some really ugly stretches. Right now dealing with a little bit of an injury as well.
Shocker.
Yeah, complete shocker. Brandon, where do you fall in the Alex Wood camp?
I'm pro Alex Wood. The injury isn't really a surprise. The hamstring and abductor discomfort. They say he still plans on making his next start. And outside of a few admittedly really terrible, awful outings and two in the last three, Wood has been really solid this year. You know, I know those outings still count, but if we just pull those last two and the 7-run one from earlier in the season, we're looking at a 2.51 ERA from him. The velocity's been down, but I've mentioned this on my show. Velocity was down early in the season on everybody. He's back up to, you know, 91.2, which is kind of where he's been sitting. Really only sat higher than that, you know, early on in his career when he is more in the 93 range. So I don't really worry about the velocity from him. It's really about him getting healthy. And they've admitted that there's been a bit of a mechanical issue here these last few outings. I'm not sure that's not tied to the injuries. So, you know, it is Alex Wood, so you knew you were getting into, a DL stint at some point. That may be coming. But, you know, it's still a guy that I'm rostering in 15-team leagues, 12-team leagues. You know, it just depends on how the bench depth goes and the value of starters. And, you know, you kind of have to weigh that for yourself.
Matt, what are your thoughts on Wood?
This is the type of guy, I know this is terrible analysis, but for me, this is the type of guy I'm never going to draft, and I'm also never going to acquire via trade because my fear of him completely falling apart while I own him cripples me. Mm. And does that make sense? I know that's lazy.
It's not lazy, but it's still at the same time is lazy.
Right, and like I know, like if I was just looking at Alex Wood and injury concerns are perhaps a little overblown. I mean, 2014, 35 starts, 2015.
My retort to that would be, is his injury concerns that much greater than virtually every other pitcher?
I think so, for me.
Okay. I mean, it's and a fair criticism.
I think so, and because the thing with Wood is the delivery is so disgusting, too.
It is.
There's a little bit to do with it, but it's... I mean, right now it's a hamstring and an abductor, but isn't it always the shoulder with him, like, every time?
It wasn't. It hasn't been the last you know, year and a half.
Okay, so maybe I misspoke then. That's my fault.
It was previously, but since coming back out of the bullpen, he's been really good. And, I mean, I know the surface numbers aren't great right now with a 4.43 ERA, but the whip is, like, 1.19, which is fine, and the FIP and XFIP are both 3.30. Sierra's 350. He's walking less guys than he ever has in his entire career. Home run rate is still fairly stable. He's getting a little bit of bad luck in the BABIP. His strand rate is extremely low at 61%. I think that maybe you're selling him a little bit short.
I could completely be doing that right now. And if you look at if you ignore the injury history, which is impossible, 100% impossible. But if you just look at the rate stats and everything, the FIP and XFIP, I know they have their warts. he's pitching better than he is numbers-wise. I'm a little bit concerned about the ground ball percentage significantly dropping, but his left on base percentage is actually terrible. It's actually well below average. His bullpen is doing him no favors. His BABIP is right along the league average lines. Home run per fly ball, it's a little high. I think I'm kind of talking myself into it on air by right now live. And I'm kind of freaking out because of my DFS thing.
yeah, you're all.
Did you see that?
yeah, I just responded to you in our staff chat. He's posting
you
pictures.
You did, I see that.
He's posting pictures of what his dollar DFS.
I turned a dollar entry and now when I'm in second place, which is $300. So that's cool.
That's awesome. But focus on fucking Alex Wood, you dick.
Fucking Alex Wood. I think I'm talking myself into Alex Wood a little bit more as we talk about it. I wouldn't. It comes to the injury thing, man. Like, if I knew he was going to make 30 starts, I think he's a top 40 starter.
Okay.
But I wouldn't bet one DFS dollar on him making 30 starts.
What if he made 25 starts?
If I was guaranteed 25 starts, I'd be on Alex Wood.
Because, I mean, I think he is a top 40 starter.
Three of the last four
starter.
Seasons, he pretty much has done that. So, again, maybe this is me cutting him short. But every time, I swear to God, every start he pitches, there's an update on Twitter. Oh, shit, Alex Wood's only throwing 87 miles an hour. Like, then, you know what I mean? Like, you get all those updates and all this weird stuff, but he still produces. And right now, the Dodgers have no choice but to run him out there. I mean, they are as injury depleted as almost anyone right now.
I mean,
so I guess
his numbers are just like spot on in line with everything he did last year. And yes, the velocity is down from last year, but I think the fact that he's left-handed and in the funky mechanics maybe throw batters off a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair.
And the control has been great.
Yeah, 100%.
4.5% walk rate right now.
Yeah, that's elite.
You know, so I mean, it's. I think Alex Wood is. I think he was underrated coming into the season. I think he is still underrated. Yes, the injury concerns are there, but you know, I mean, he has the same injury concerns as a lot of other guys, a lot of other pitchers, but he gets downgraded more for it. Like, I mean, how is he, you know, downgraded so much more than you know Garrett Richards was? When he, you know, he's coming off a season where he threw 152 innings, you know, and like you mentioned, you know, the four seasons before this, he had thrown at least 152 in each of, or three of those four seasons. So, let's move on. Let's talk about Stephen Wright, because what Stephen Wright is doing right now is a little crazy. He's come in to replace Drew Pomeranz in the Boston rotation after Pomeranz left with injury. Or is gone on the DL with injury, and he's kind of going so far. You know, this is only two starts. One start, his first start was great. Second start was today. And again, five strikeouts today, no earned runs. Went 6 2/3. Brandon, what are you doing with Stephen Wright?
Well, we've seen it from him before. He's put up a 3.3 ERA across 24 starts and 156 2/3 innings. But it's always hard to evaluate a knuckleballer because, you know, if the wind's blowing wrong that day or they didn't get the right manicure done, you know, the ball doesn't move right and it starts getting spin and it just hangs there and then it's batting practice. So it's really not even necessarily about matchup or how he's throwing at the time. It's kind of dependent on the weather to a certain extent. You know, certainly feel better about it if he's indoors. That's always been kind of the place that you start knuckleballers. It's the ideal conditions. And then if you happen to know that the wind is blowing out, that I've read that that's better for them than the wind blowing in, which is, you know, when you have those batting practice days. You could tell me he's a 3 ERA the rest of the season, or you could tell me he's a 6, and I don't know that there's a lot of surprise either way. I will say that he hasn't given up an earned run since May 18th. So, I mean, he's worked a good bit without surrendering a lot of runs. it could be a nice cheap source of wins as you're chasing, you know, as we get into that part of the season. He is on a good team. So I think it's worth taking a shot on him. But if it starts to fall apart, I wouldn't be worried about letting him go either. It's just kind of one of those guys that you're just going to have to take the knocks when it's not going right. Because, again, it's a knuckleballer. You have no idea how it's going to go start to start. It's not somebody throwing 96 with a nasty breaking ball that you know what you're expecting out of them. It's really just dependent.
Matt, where are you at on Steven Wright?
We've seen a little bit of this before. Do you remember he was an All-Star?
Yeah, 2016, yeah.
He had that run where he had like a 2.2 ERA in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where he's at right now. I mean, 1.15. And Brandon touched on a lot of this. It'd be a lot of repetition here, but this is well beyond his true talent level, obviously. And it could literally flip his next start.
It
and
will
be terrible.
I mean, maybe not
because
his next start, but it
knuckleballs will. There's so many I don't like rostering knuckleball guys, and luckily there's only one in the majors right now. But there's so much unpredictability that goes into this. It goes into a knuckleball. I mean, he's walking over 5 guys per 9, which, by the way, is his career high since he became a full-time starting pitcher, which he isn't really even a full-time starter now, so I guess that's a bad way to say it. He's only started 1 game. But he's going to be a starter now, and his walk rate's insanely high, unsustainable, 185 BABIP. But again, if the knuckleball is moving, it's a total different story. Again, you roll him out there, you didn't pay anything for him, and you keep using him until he blows up. But just be prepared to cut bait any minute. Don't be trading for him. Just don't.
No, hopefully you picked him up to start this week because, this is not.
Why
going,
would you though? I mean,
because he had a 2-star week. Against crappy competition.
6 2/3 today, zero earned, 3 walks, 5 Ks.
Yeah, I picked him up in Tout Wars. And in the Invitational, just streaming him for the 2-start week. So he's it's interesting because I'm gonna pull it up on the leaderboard on FanGraphs right now, but I want to say he's obviously not a qualified pitcher because he hasn't started enough games yet to be one. But if he was, he'd be giving up the least amount of hard contact by over 5 percentage points. Because, I mean, these guys are so hard. The knuckleballers are so hard to square up. Yeah. But he also, like Matt mentioned, he's also walking 5 per 9 so far. So, and had another 3 walks today and 6 2/3. So, I mean, this is not a guy that, you know, obviously there's going to be some massive regression. But, you know, he's one of those guys that maybe will get away with it as teams only see him once. And you can, you know, kind of use him for a little while. And then as soon as things start to go sour with him, go ahead and just feel free to cut bait. You know, more than likely, I'm going to be cutting bait on him in the Invitational and in Tout Wars after this week, just grabbing the 2-start week in weekly leagues right now, and then moving on after this.
Yeah, that's good advice because
the peripherals don't look great.
I always like to, not to go on a side tangent or anything, but I always like when analysts give advice that they're actually doing, and we do that here. And that's exactly what you're doing here, and it'll be fun. We kind of can go on the ride with you if we're kind of
well. And it was a great move in Tout Wars because the like I said, I have
what do you go for Bab. I was just curious because you kind
of
you know
I think I put $45 of my 1,000.
No, so 4.5.
I streamed a bunch of guys this week. I you know it's a head to head points league. I'm going up against Jake Seeley, who's the number one team, number one in the standings. Coming into this week, I really need to sweep both hitting and pitching and the overall, but at worst, I need to sweep pitching and the overall. And so I streamed 4 starters that had 2-star weeks. Let's see, I streamed Steven Wright. Who was the other guy who started today? I always F up this guy's name, Gaviglio.
Sam Gaviglio, former Cardinals prospect.
Hey, that's who cost me my my lead over you in TGFBI today. That was a terrible outing.
Yes, at least
you enjoyed that pain with me.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying that pain. I'm also enjoying the pain of Andrew Heaney, who has not pitched well either today, and he's on a two-start week. But I also streamed a guy tomorrow, and for those of you who play DFS or can do like daily pickups, Blaine Hardy, left-hander for Detroit tomorrow. He is going up against the Twins, who have the highest strikeout percentage in the league against left-handed pitching.
Hey, it's Francis Fantasy Benefits. We recommend Stephen Wright and Blaine Hardy.
Yeah, exactly. Like these are it's like, you know, a lot of our listeners.
No, but you're right. That's the game now.
I also stream Clay Buchholz.
That's a good pick. Buchholz is back, baby.
Yeah, and so like, you know, Hardy is not a good pitcher, but he's got two really good starts this week. Home versus Minnesota. On the road at the White Sox, both teams who struggle against left-handed pitching and strike out a ton against left-handed pitching. So, like, again, like, these are guys, like, I did the same thing against Clay Link last week and beat him 6-2 because he was the second-place team coming into last week, and I've been the third or fourth-place team virtually all season due to the amount of injuries I've had. And so, like, my strategy has been when I'm playing these guys who are above me in the standings, I just stream half my pitching roster.
That worked.
You know, and I've pretty much hoarded my fab for these moments. And now I don't have as much fab, but I'm like back closer to the pack in terms of the amount of
your fab, league so. Doesn't make sense. So in a lot of leagues, and what I've started doing, and I have a really deep home league that I play in. It's 12 teams, but I say this a lot. Pitching is might as well be 15 or so teams because it's skews pitching heavy.
Yes.
And
there's unlimited DL. So, like, I have nine guys on the DL right now, which in the majority of leagues you would never be able to do.
That's nice.
But, like, I've got Kershaw, Robbie Ray, Cueto, Samardzija, Ottavino, or just my pitchers on the DL.
Right. I purposely, and what I was getting to is I stream a lot, probably three times a week. But if I can't find anyone that I like, I will pick up a middle reliever and stream him.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that
and
probably
that
at the end of the week.
It's wonderful for ratios. It's wonderful for ratios. And you wouldn't think it matters, but if you do that, like I said, three times a week, you might be getting three innings and no base runners. That'll stabilize a bad start.
In some leagues, especially last year, I did this a lot with the amount of injuries we saw last year, was I had six relievers in my lineup, and then I just rotated in, you know, in daily moves leagues, I've rotated in the starting pitchers. And so I was constantly getting stats from the relievers and helped keep my ratios down. And then I was able to stream those starting pitchers in and out of my lineups, you know, with maybe one or two studs and then, you know, one or two. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the guys were kind of just like whatever, you know, mediocre guys. But they rack up the strikeouts and wins. And I've already stabilized the ratios with the amount of middle relief options I've got on my team. So, you know, always look for kind of different ways to get a little bit of an advantage in your league. And I've been doing that a little bit in Tauors. It's kept me alive in spite of the massive amount of injuries I've suffered and underperformances from guys like Michael Conforto. You know, you've always got to figure out the best way you can kind of beat your guys or your opponents to the punch. All right, let's get back on track. Let's talk about Michael Wacha, and we're going to end there for this show. And I'm only bringing him up because he threw he almost threw a no-hitter.
Near no-hitter.
Sorry, yeah. I was watching the game, and I was actually really bummed for him because I really
– Yeah, that's
– he pitched a hell of a game, and
– They showed the highlight, too. Remember, did they show the highlight when you saw when he was one batter, 8 2/3, no-hit ball, and then Ryan Zimmerman had an infield single? I was like, what?
Yeah.
A couple years back, of all people.
And Walker's always been a guy that I've really liked. And I have a number of shares this year. I've been enjoying the fruits of that labor, you know, as of late. So I'll start with you, Matt, because you are a Cardinals homer, and you go to bat for your boys.
Fan wrong. You pronounce
yeah,
fan
exactly.
wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So what are your thoughts so far this year on Michael Wacha?
It's been outstanding, obviously. He was kind of the guy, obviously it's a moot point for a couple different reasons. Number one, Reyes isn't around anymore. Number two, Wacha's pitching beyond, you know, I what we've seen since the 2013 postseason, really. That's kind of where we're at with Waka. His 2013 season, it looks pretty much identical to this. What Waka was doing in the years past, he's not doing so much anymore, was he wasn't getting on top of the ball. He was gripping the ball sometimes, and he would drop his arm angle a little bit, drop the release point, and he was getting on the side of the ball. And when you are a guy that throws a high... He's one of the weird guys that gets it done primarily without a breaking ball. I know it says he throws a slider, but it's a cutter. It's a faster pitch. It's a cutter, not really a slider. He does have to throw a curveball, which is incorporating in more, which he's been learning from Wainwright over the years. But he's a fastball changeup predominantly, and he uses the cutter against lefties. But the release point is finally the same. He would drop the arm angle, and he wasn't getting on top of the changeup, and he wasn't able to use it because then they're setting up on the fastball because, like I said, he's primarily a two-pitch guy before this year, a little bit mixing in others. And you look at, you know, what he's been doing, he's finally fallen back in love with that changeup again, and it's back on to where he can use it almost a quarter of the time. And it's such a good pitch. It's got fade and depth, and he's using it against righties, he's using it against lefties. Nothing really except for the home run per fly ball. He's pitching to the defense, which I know the BABIP's at 240. It's going to jump up, which obviously will take the rest of the numbers with it. And the command hasn't been pinpoint because he does still struggle with repeating as much as he should. But I think this is a guy, he's a testament to the Cardinals' strength and conditioning program because he's had a lot of shoulder concerns in his past. He's never really missed significant time. But he's always the kind of guy that they'll just all of a sudden skip him a start or two through the rotation just to give him a break. He's kind of a Derek Gould's fantastic beat writer for the Cardinals. Always writes how, you know, Waka will probably never be a 200-inning guy just because the workload, the Cardinals don't think he can handle it with his shoulder, which is a little concerned, but he's had nothing but health issues so far. He's looked stronger than he ever has. Yeah, he's getting a little bit lucky as far as home runs and the BABIP in general. It's because the walks are up. But I do think the walks will come back down, but the home runs will go up. So he's obviously not going to be this level pitcher. But I think when the year's up, I don't see any reason why he can't have a 3.3 ERA, and that's more than fine in this era. So I like Waka a lot, and he's surprising the hell out of me. I was ready to launch him into outer space because he was out, man out, you know, with the rotation in my eyes. But even DFS masters like me can be wrong.
If anybody is proving the point today that DFS is just as much luck as skill,
perfect, right? Comes full circle.
Yeah, is totally you. You are proving this point for us fantastically today. Brandon, what are your thoughts on Michael Waka?
So it's a guy that I've gone up and down with, which is, I think, fair given that his, you know, stat line year to year has been up and down. It's a type of guy that I hate evaluating because the numbers never line up. He's either outperforming the numbers when it's going well and you're waiting for it to all fall apart, or when it's going really poorly, you're like, he should be better than this. All these things say he should be better than this. What's going on? And in both scenarios, I can't explain it away. So I really hate looking into a guy like this. And I talked to my co-host, Donkey Teeth, who's also a Cardinals fan, and I think he put it the right way. It's the way that Michael Waka is. He just goes out there.
Yeah, that's fair.
He gets it done. I mean, there's no reason.
To Waka's credit, sorry to cut you off, he looks the same. If he gives up 12 runs or no runs, he looks the same.
Yeah.
It agitates you sometimes because, you know, he's got that God-given ability to throw a baseball better than 99.9% of the population. And he looks like baseball's not, I know this isn't a fair thing to say because I don't know him personally, but watching him, it looks like baseball's not his preferred profession, but he's just doing it because he's good at it. So I think that sums it up.
Well, I think maybe that's, yeah, I think that's a reach.
No,
just because he's not like an explosive guy.
I'm not saying that I'm right. I'm just saying that's what it looks like watching him. He's not an emotional guy at all. He's stoic, which is a really good thing to be, I guess.
I've always been a Waka guy. I paid for it 2 years ago when I was really high on him, and he sucked. And last year he was mediocre and he was fine. You know, and this year I'm reaping some of the rewards of it. Obviously, there's going to be regression. XFIP 382, FIP 342, Sierra is a 427. Wow. Wow, Sierra's really high. That's interesting. He's giving up a ton of hard contact right now, which is a bit concerning. But he's also lowered his fly ball rate this year. He isn't walking guys. He is walking guys still, but he isn't giving up home runs at all, which is really nice. And like you mentioned, Matt, the BABIP is much lower than it's going to be. So there's obviously some regression coming. That being said, I think he is a very good pitcher. I think he's got a pretty decent defense behind him. He's in a park that can play to his strengths a little bit. And even if he gives up a few more home runs, and I think he'll be okay. I think he's a guy that'll probably be a 3.5 ERA guy the rest of the way and get you 8 strikeouts per 9. And that is a pretty valuable pitcher in this day and age, especially if he can go more than the 165 innings we saw last year. And I think that'll be big for a guy like Waka.
Yeah, I agree with that.
The walks are up about 2% from his normal career numbers, so I might watch out for that a little bit as well.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking with you guys, regardless of the numbers and everything that say that there's terrible things to come, I think he's probably around that mid-3s ERA going forward.
The walks are down, and that is because he's going outside of the zone more often this year. He's dropped his zone percentage by about 3%. But he's also, giving up less contact within and without outside of the zone, which I like. Getting the same amount of swings and misses outside of the zone. So I think my biggest concern is that the contact that he is giving up will start going out of the park a little bit more often. And right now is usually stellar home run rate is even much lower than it is before, and I think that'll come back to haunt him more than the walk rate will. All right, that is gonna wrap us up for this episode. Brandon, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Happy to talk to you guys. It was a great time. If you ever need somebody to come on and make fun of somebody or talk some baseball, you let me know.
We would definitely do that again. Remind everybody where you can be reached on social media, and then plug all your work.
At Ditka Sausage Pod on Twitter. Writing at Razzball. I have an article up this week. And as I mentioned, we just got our show is moving over to Razzball. So we will be hosted over there. May take a few days to get everything kind of sorted out, but we will have a new podcast for you as soon as it is.
All right. Matt, what are you working on? Where are you reached?
I can be reached at MD Tomp FWFB. You can catch my new DFS podcast since I am a pro now. And Friends of Fantasy Benefits. I'm also selling
there
lineups.
There is a DFS
too,
podcast for Friends of Fantasy Benefits.
There
for
is.
Those of you
there
who
is.
Play
but
DFS.
I'm making my own.
Yeah,
I'm my own
but
too.
They're actually talented guys who host that.
Yes.
Michael Alexander at Roto _ one on Twitter. Chris Bouvier. I think he's at C Bouvier on Twitter.
That's right.
Those guys actually know what they're talking about, and they just had like Vlad Sedler on. They've had some pretty good guests, including our very own Justin Mason at one point.
Maybe
this
maybe
season.
They'll have me on now since I'm qualified.
Yeah, no.
I'm also going to be selling DFS lineups, so if you want to buy one, DM me.
Matt doesn't care
and,
if they're illegal.
Come get me. I'll just where I live. And yeah, other than that, I just dropped my top 300 list for prospects, so check that out. A lot of work put into that.
I'll pin that to the top of the FWFB Twitter page.
I have it pinned to my page. Go ahead, because mine is just the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yours is actually a link to the site, so do that. I'll switch mine up too. We'll get the site traffic if we can, but. Yeah, it's good. I put a lot of time in that list. I have right now. I'm actually have my Excel sheet open. I'm doing my kind of rankings for the draft.
Mm.
So I kind of have a rough outline of that. I'm only focusing on really the first 3 round guys right now. There's a lot of high school kids that I like that signed later, but I don't want to put them in there then find out they didn't sign. So we're going to wait on those. I'm going to stick with the first three rounds for now. I'm going to get those out there. We'll see what we can do with that. So look for that in the next coming days. Also, getting them to top. So maybe there'll be no promises here, but maybe there'll be a small update with that, with the draft picks in it. And well, obviously, for some reason, we have a...
Why don't we plan next week? The guest we were supposed to have on, unfortunately, had to cancel for next week. So why don't you and I plan on doing maybe just a you and me podcast, and we'll just go over your ranks for the draft in terms of fantasy.
We can do that. Sure. Yeah. All right. And we'll see. Yeah. All right. That'll work. We'll do that then. We'll have a draft podcast. Yeah, I can get it done. Shit, man. You know, although I have to fit in a DFS podcast in my schedule now, so we'll see. But other than that, yeah, I'll stop rambling. I'm kind of FWFB. Just hit me up and talk some ball.
All right, you can reach me Justin. On Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. Email me or the show, friendsfantasybenefits@gmail.com. You can hear me on the Friends Fantasy Benefits baseball podcast, where I'm on anywhere from 1 to 3 times a week. You can hear me over on The Sleeper and the Bust with Paul Spohr, Jason Collette, and Nick Pollock at least twice a week. You can hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network Sundays from 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern for the Tout Wars Hour with Laura Michaels and Todd Zola. You can also read all my work over at Fangraphs, Friends with Fantasy Benefits, Fantasy Alarm, Fantrax, and I think that's it right now. Also follow the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational that we kind of been talking about over on Twitter.
You need to see the ending. You need to see the ending to this Florida-Auburn College World Series game. Bottom of the 11th inning, Florida's home. Dude hits a line drive to right field corner. Auburn's right fielder gets up to there, has to jump a little bit because it's at the wall. The ball goes off his glove over the fence, game over. It would not have been a home run.
Was it better than the what happened in the Rays game the other day where Carlos Gomez and Jake Bowers scissored?
I admittedly did not see that, and I probably not watch that.
You need to go look at my Roto write-up piece from earlier today. I've got the video from that.
Okay, I will do that. And not to mention, this game also, that play sent Auburn home. Florida advances to the College World Series. So that is a rough.
Oh, that sucks.
Wow.
Casey Mize is now a Detroit Tiger.
At least he got through it without getting injured.
You need to watch it. I just retweeted it. You need to watch it. I feel so bad for those kids from Auburn because holy shit, that's a brutal ending. Because it wasn't even going to be a home run. And it just, oh man, that's rough.
Yeah, that is rough. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to wrap it up for this episode.
Already getting people tweeting at me for DFS tips. No joke. When I posted my picture. I'm going to screenshot it and send it to you, Justin.
Awesome. That's going to do it for me, Matt, and Brandon. Thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.